Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. It's a minute past the hour on this, the 29th day of April, 2016. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if, by chance, you might like to jump into the chat room, where you will join the likes of Jug of Punch and Little Gray and Sentient Being and, of course, longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has folded space to become Man Cave. Yes, indeed. Longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie will probably be along presently. This is, of course, a listener-supported operation. We try to raise about $200 every evening. And that being the case, well, we're trying to raise about $290. Wait a minute, $280 this evening. $280 this evening. One at 280, two at 140, four at 70, eight at 35, 16 at 1750. Let's see, 1750. 32 at 875, I think. And after that, we're into odd numbers. And yep, right. Not divisible by right. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yes, yes. Thank you for the reminder, Little Gray in the chat room. Say, here is a host whom has yet to identify himself on the air. And now I have. Ha ha, ha ha. So, this being the 29th day of April, 2016, it is the last broadcast day of the month of April. It is, it's anniversary weekend for Agnes and me. Mm-hmm. The first day of May will mark 23 years of wedded bliss for us. Haven't figured out how we're going to celebrate it, but you know, it'll probably be in the rain if the long-range forecast is any indication. Apparently, we're looking for showers tomorrow. Oh, hey, Sunday, our anniversary, thunderstorms. How nice! I guess the weather app doesn't have a little icon for frogs and locusts or anything, but you know what? Love amor vincit omnia, right? Love conquers all. Yeah, and it's Friday on the front porch, which means that in about 56 minutes or so, longtime Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator Sparky will fire up the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and do his usual stellar job of moderating the extraordinary ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch. If you have never participated in Friday on the front porch but would like to do so, then by all means log in to your Skype account and send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunk, and include a little note in there saying Friday on the front porch or something like that, or I want in on Friday on the front porch or front porch or porch, anything that will let Sparky know that you're not another one of those misunderstood Nigerian widows who are trying to find someone to help them transfer several millions of dollars from their Saudi husband who died of cancer and left them a fortune that they can't access. You know the scam. It really doesn't take that much explanation, does it? But when you do, when you send the contact request, Sparky will put out the breadcrumb trail for you so that you can follow it all the way to the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch. Okay? Oh, and by the way, for those of you who would prefer to help support the program via the United States Postal Service, we do that too. It's just easier, for many people, sitting at a computer anyway, or near a computer, it is easier to use PayPal, and they have always proven quite functional and quite helpful along the way. There's an interface there under the tab Contribute, and all you have to do is go in there and put in your name and who you are, and you can leave blank the fields what it is you do over to the Shady Rest Motel. The Shady Rest Notel Motel. Yeah. And just get to the next screen. If you do, however, prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service, then checks and money orders made payable to the Horn should be mailed to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And we emphasize the checks and the money orders because we also share that address, not the box, but the street address, with the Klan. We didn't mean to. It's not intentional, but we do. The Klan have a box there, and of course the Klan are a bunch of thieving, no-good terrorists. So, you know, if an envelope was to be mistakenly right. So, checks, money orders, etc. Speaking of the Klan, this is, I mean, I guess there's lots of different clans. We've got a national headquarters of one of their weird little sick terrorist groups here in West Virginia. But there's also some over in, the Old Dominion of Virginia. And a reporter of color by the name of Chris Thomas went out into the woods of, I guess, Northern Virginia to speak to the Grand Imperial Wizard of the Rebel Brigade Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Mm-hmm. Just to find out what the Klan's up to these days, how they feel about things, and lo and behold, if he didn't walk away with the Grand Imperial Wizard, his majestic, noble graciousness, and 32nd degree member of the Raccoon Order of the Loyal Raccoon, thank you very kindly, Randy, loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, appreciate it. Darned if he didn't come away with an endorsement by the Grand Exalted Noble Shalomaneser of Donald Trump. Not that I'm surprised, but, well, I just thought you might like checking in on seeing what it sounds like to hear a real, live, honest-to-God, the 33rd degree noble lumpkin when he goes to speaking. Oh, he's got his robe on and his funny hat, and it's all made out of shiny satin and everything. Sex, classy. Classy, just like T-Rump, yes.
The society today is more racial than we are.
As a matter of fact, the Southern Poverty Law Center says there are more than 30 hate groups right here in Virginia, including the KKK. But the Imperial Wizard says he wants to set the record straight on what some call a controversial symbol of hate.
This flag right here is the Confederate battle flag. This is not the flag of the Ku Klux Klan.
The flag of the what? This silly old pudgy old pasty-faced doughy pink bastard can't even pronounce the name of his own organization. Yeah, you heard him. The Clueless Klux Klan? The Ku Klux Klan, not the Clue Klux Klan. Jesus, I'll bet he never even meant to join. He was trying to join the Ku Klux Klan. There he is in the Ku Klux Klan. Son of a gun. Well, let's make sure. Okay, but we're going to get it. We're going to get a dissertation on the flag.
A bull of hate.
This flag right here is the Confederate battle flag. This is not the flag of the Ku Klux Klan. This is the flag of the Ku Klux Klan. This,
he says, pointing to the Stars and Stripes, the flag of the United States of America.
This all started over a little punk thug.
Okay, we're going to... Now, this is going to be fun. We're going to get Klansplained. Yes, we're going to get Klansplained about what happened, how Dylann Roof came to just spoil all their clannish fun by going and attacking the Mother Emanuel Church and killing 9 human beings because of the color of their skin.
He went in a church and murdered a bunch of innocent people.
Notice the... Now, I can't help the music there. Blame that on the TV station, which is apparently NBC 12 in Richmond. But notice how the Klansman says he murdered 9 innocent, pause, people. You see, when there's not a reporter there and cameras rolling, people is not the word the Klan uses to describe the 9 people who were murdered by Dylann Roof. Because, see, they were all, you know, black. And that's not, people is not the word that the Klan uses to describe people of color. We won't list them, the names they use. Let's don't say we didn't.
That was wrong.
You may remember pictures surfaced of Charleston church shooter Dylann Roof waving a Confederate flag before killing 9 black church members.
He was a Nazi, skinhead.
Okay, we're going to... Oh, this is political philosophy according to the Klan. And you might consider getting the duct tape and the hockey puck out.
Roof waving a Confederate flag before killing 9 black church members.
He was a Nazi. Skinhead. Neo-Nazis and skinheads are socialists. We are not socialists. We are patriotic American citizens standing up for our God, family, and country.
You said,
Yeah. Skinheads and neo-Nazis, they're socialists. What do you spec here with Jethro, Imperial Wizard Jethro Bodine here? No, that's not. That's being mean to the fictitious character Jethro Bodine, because Jethro Bodine done made it all the way through the 6th grade. I got 3rd grade at best on the 33rd degree, exalted imperial noble majestic highness. Water buffalo. Ack-ack-a-dack, Flintstone. Ack-ack-a-dack, Poobah.
You're not white supremacists.
No, we are not white supremacists. We are white separatists. We choose to stay within our own race. We're not the big, bad hate group that everybody thinks we are.
I mean, they got a ladies' auxiliary, and they have cake. They have cakewalks and bake sales and car washes. And I mean, they're not the big, bad. They're the little bitty hate group. I mean, they just like to wear flags and burn. I mean, they just like to wear robes and burn crosses and sit around looking really silly and inbred. That's your modern day Klan. That's what that is.
I mean, a lot of people. As soon as they hear the words Ku Klux Klan, they automatically, their mind just automatically goes back to the 1950s and 60s.
And you understand that, though. I mean, it was a pretty bad time.
It was a pretty bad time, but that was...
Time out, Jack. Okay. Time out. Our reporter here says the 1950s and 1960s were a pretty bad time. And the grand exalted noble Lumpkin agrees with him that it was a pretty bad time. You, me, we, us. Is that how we describe the 1950s and 1960s? Pretty bad time. Yeah, pretty bad time for old Medgar Evers. Pretty bad time for old Doc King. Pretty bad time. Pretty bad time. Yeah. No. Pretty bad time. You see, I get the idea that our intrepid reporter here, when he's talking about a pretty bad time, he's not talking about the pretty bad time, same pretty bad time that the grand and exalted unicorn here is talking about. Because see, when the grand and exalted unicorn talks about a pretty bad time, he's talking about how America went wrong, you know, by letting them by them unelected black robe judges on the Supreme Court letting people interracial marry and thinning the pure Aryan stock of whiteness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The Ku Klux Klan. Not from back there in that pretty bad time when it was the Ku Klux Klan out there lynching people and bombing churches and murdering women in cars like Viola Liuza. It's a pretty bad time. And the distinction, as Robert up near Morgantown just pointed out, the distinction is not between socialists and patriotic American citizens. No, really, the distinction's between fascists and apples. Because, of course, the Nazis and the neo-Nazis and the skinheads, they are not socialists. They are fascists. Whereas these are just a bunch of ignorant inbred sister fisters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ooh, I think we're well on the way to a damn fine little conversation this evening. Meanwhile, let me deal with this real quick. Too many things going on here. Okay, that's taken care of. And that. Oh, let's see, what all do we have here? A little something from North Carolina, Stan. Apparently, it's more than just transgendered people that gets their freedom hackles up. They're in North Carolina, Stan. No. Apparently, you know, because the NRA has already told us, you know, via Wayne LaPierre, that it's a dangerous world out there. You know where it can get particularly dangerous? It can get particularly dangerous at wing joints. Yeah, wing joints. And I love me some wings. I love all kinds of different wings. Sometimes I like the blazing hot ones, and sometimes I like the garlic parmesans, and sometimes the spicy sweet heat Asian speaks to me, or sometimes they'll call them Thai wings, and then there's the not so spicy at all teriyaki wings. And I just love them all. I love wings. And like anybody, I don't like it if I'm in a blazing hot fiery mode, and they bring me those mild little teriyaki wings. It just pisses me right off. Well, apparently it pisses them off in North Carolina too. It particularly pissed off Clarissa and Rasheem Gagum. Gagum. They're both 24. They went to Fu Wangs, or would that be Foo Wangs? It's in Wilmington, North Carolina, and their order of chicken wings got messed up. And well, you know, we went over this the other day. It's Joe Pesci and that Mel Gibson movie with Danny Glover. They get the drive-through. Well, they got the Wang's order wrong at FU Wang's. And that's when Clarissa Gagum went back to her car and got her freedom protector.
Wolverines! Cock-a-doodle-doo!
And went back in the store and proceeded to brandish said freedom protector. The cops were called, and they were arrested without too much incident. There was some incident because Mr. Gagum was charged with resisting arrest while bold, upstanding, God-fearing, patriotic Clarissa Gagum was charged with assault and property damage. Yeah. And they're free on bond. I mean, look, sometimes people just have a bad day. And, you know, when you have a bad day, it's not the really bad things that really finally just push you over the edge. It's when you've had a bad day and all you wanted was some F.U. Wangs, and they mix up your order and you don't get the popping hot habaneros, and instead you got the gloopy Parmesans, and it just pushes right over the edge. You gotta go get your freedom protector that you carry in your car, because it's a dangerous world out there, made more dangerous by people carrying their freedom protectors in their car. Because really, couldn't you just kind of stand around while they fixed your order, ma'am? They'll be happy to make it right. The only thing that'll stop a bad guy with bad wings is a good guy, good gal with a gun. This is one of those happy ending stories, though, because nobody got shot. The same, however, cannot be said of an incident in Talladega, Alabama. Mm-mm, no. Some folks there had a problem with being broke into, and they had a particular individual who kept breaking into their home. Well, let's just check in with the report from WVTM Channel 13. down in Talabama, shall we? Yeah, you remember the movie that catapulted Macaulay Culkin to fame, Home Alone, and all the dastardly things that he did to Joe Pesci again? Well, it's a Joe Pesci kind of Friday on the front porch, I guess. And Macaulay Culkin was just a little evil genius, and he did all kinds of fun stuff to the bad guys. Interestingly enough, and I suppose the movie just would have ended far too soon and not raked in nearly as much dough as it did, had young Macaulay Culkin just taken out the Family Freedom Protector, and blasted a few holes in the ne'er-do-well miscreants. That's what happened. That's what happened down Talladega way. Here we go. Them some fancy. That's a fancy sound bed.
With a gun, if you can get out of my house.
11-year-old, I believe, Chris Gaither, is it? Yeah. Let's hear from him now after a little bit more of the really snappy sound bed.
I told him I was going to kill him all that with a gun if he didn't get out of my house.
11-year-old Chris Gaither was home alone Wednesday morning when he heard a noise. Someone had broken into his house. Scared, Chris grabbed a 9mm handgun.
Yeah, time out again. Wednesday morning, he's home alone. I don't think they've gone to an August through March school schedule in Talabama yet. I don't know. I don't know why this 11-year-old was not in school, but he wasn't. And it's a good thing too. Because when the freedom burglar came along, Chris was waiting.
When he's come downstairs and told me he's gonna kill me and F you all that.
The intruder made it out the front door with a hamper in hand. That's when Chris started firing off bullets as the intruder was...
Bullets? I guess anybody can get a job in broadcast media now, including Kyle Berger. That's straight out of a Bugs Bunny. No more bullets? No more bullets. No more bullets. And that's what he fired. That's what was inside the 9mm handgun was bullets. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was quite the little flurry there.
Firing off bullets as the intruder was to jump this fence, Chris's 12th and final shot hit the bad guy in the leg.
No word on where the other 11 rounds went. The bullets go out. Who cares where they come down? Missed him with first, missed him with the second, missed him with the third, missed him with the fourth, missed him with the fifth. But the 12th one, that was the money bullet. And that's why, you see, Merca, that's why we have to have high-capacity magazines, because it ain't everybody going to be a trained shootinizer. Sometimes you're going to have an amateur freedom protector who's going to need that extra round or two before he can plug the guy who's running away. Because down in Talabama, you can do that. You can plug them when they're running away, especially if they're running away with your stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to have laws in this country that said you couldn't use deadly force in defense of property. That's on the way out. More on that in a minute, if you don't... Yeah. We'll be using use of deadly force in prevention, never mind a citizen's arrest. It'll be citizens preventing jaywalking and so forth before too awfully long. Now, a little more from young Master Gaither.
I shot through a hamper that he was carrying, and it was a full metal jacket bullet. Huh. I went straight through the bag of him and was like...
Don't you love our intrepid reporter? Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah, okay.
This full metal jacket bullet went right through the hamper and right through him. I mean, what do you expect an 11-year-old kid to do? It was a dangerous situation. Thank God he got him with the 12th bullet as he was running away.
He started crying like a little baby.
A baby that learned his lesson.
Yes, I'll bet he did.
I pulled the gun out on him. I guess he didn't think it was a real gun because he didn't worry about it. He just kept on walking.
The police have not released the name of the suspect, but Chris's mother says this man has robbed their house before. They don't know him personally. Chris credits his stepdad for his shooting skills.
Yeah, play zombies for target practice.
Turns out there's more than a basset hound on guard.
I hope you learned your lesson from coming to this house trying to steal stuff.
In Talladega, Kyle Berger, WVTM 13 News.
Oh, Kyle. Kyle has a real career ahead of him. And, yep, his stepdaddy. Stepdaddy done taught him to shoot because they play zombies together. You know, you couldn't script this and turn it into a Saturday Night Live skit or anything that Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert would talk about. This couldn't get through the first round of scripting. Nah, it's just dumb. We don't have the whole report here, but plucky video journalist Kyle Berger asked the young fella if he wanted to pass along any messages to the viewers of WVTM 13 there, and little Chris said, "Be brave and you'll be okay. Long as you got 12 rounds in your 9mm. No real in-depth analysis of how it is that the 12-year-old knows where the family 9mm is, or what kind of a risk that provides to the family. During the interview, his mama was there, and she said, "Tell him about him pointing the gun out at you, baby." Little Chris said, "All right. He pointed a gun at me when he was coming downstairs, and then I told him I was going to kill him and all that, and to get out of my house. And I shot one time, and then he started running. I shot a bunch of times and missed him all 11 times. You know what? When you're playing zombies, those zombies will wear you the hell out and eat your brains right out of your poor little pumpkin head when you miss with the first 11 shots. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris Gaither defended freedom well down there in Talladega. And he had a real live, honest-to-God, because it had 12 rounds of 9mm ammunition in it, the Freedom Protector. Dedrick Colvin didn't. No, he just had a BB gun with him. Of course, this wasn't down in Talladega. This is up in Baltimore. Now, been a couple of shootings in Baltimore recently. One point in time, a white man wearing what was described as a panda suit, although the photograph I saw was kind of white and gray, and I wasn't at all sure that it was even a vague approximation of a panda, but it was some sort of animal. He went up to a Baltimore TV station and said, "Listen here, I got me some explosives strapped to me. And I'm going to blow us all to kingdom come unless you play the video that's here on this jump drive that I'm going to bring into the station for y'all to play, because I know all about the Illuminati and the chemtrails and the Bohemian Grove and how Hillary killed Vince Foster. No, he didn't say what was on the drive. He just said, y'all going to have to play this on air, or I'm going to blow us all straight to the moon. Well, they called the police, TV station did, and they locked down the station and wouldn't let him in. Police showed up, and they told him repeatedly get down on the ground, you know, the kind of stuff that cops say to people who claim to have bombs strapped to them. And they told him that several times before they finally shot the man in the ostensible panda costume. Mm-hmm. Well, so let's go back to Dedrick Colvin. Dedrick Colvin was not a white man in an ostensible panda suit. Dedrick Colvin was a little black boy who was carrying a basketball and his trusty BB gun. You know, Red Ryder with a compass in the stock. You don't need that, kid. You'll put your eye out. Well, that's been modified for the 21st century. You don't need that if you're a black kid. The cops will shoot you. Because they did. Now, a witness says that Dedrick Colvin yelled, "The gun ain't real," when the cops saw him and told him to turn around. But here's what happens. The cops see him, not entirely sure as to whether somebody dropped a dime on him like they did on Tamir Rice, and they holler, "Put down the gun! Put down the gun! Put down the gun! Bang, bang!" They didn't use 12 rounds on Dedrick Colvin, because apparently the police are somewhat better shots than Chris Gaither. Then again, they're full-grown adults and presumably trained in the dark arts of police work, and so they only had to shoot twice, shooting him in the leg and the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Dedrick Colvin has survived. As of yesterday, he was still in the hospital. He comes from the East Baltimore community. And there is no small amount of consternation at his having been shot for what is apparently the summarily punishable offense of possession of BB gun by black kid. So enter... Enter the police commissioner of Baltimore, Kevin Davis. Kevin Davis gave a press conference in which he explained that it was Dedrick Colvin's own fault for getting himself shot by police who couldn't tell the difference between a BB gun and, say, a .30-06 or a a .30-06 or a bazooka or a AR-15 Bushmaster or a Gatling gun. Commissioner Davis explained, "Police officers don't have to wait until they're being shot to engage in a deadly force scenario. The only time you really know if what looks like a gun is a gun is after someone starts squeezing the trigger." You'll notice that he made sure to say squeezing, not pulling, because had he said pulling, Every God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-mentalist, amosexual in this country would have had a purple polka-dotted blue screaming conniption and kittens with crocheted tails. God damn it! Don't you see? That's the problem here. You don't pull the trigger. You squeeze it. And you, cause you breathe, you relax, you aim, you sight, and you squeeze. That's what you call your brass method of firearms. Firearms utilization. Yeah, you don't pull no. There ain't no P in brass. Commissioner Davis continued on. If a person is seen walking down a city street with one of those in his hand, what does the community want the police to do? What do they expect us to do? Drive by? We all played cops and robbers with toy guns when we were younger. But if you have a replica and you take it out on the street, what was the intention? Let me know next time there's a... I'll try to keep an eye out, but if you see one, please let me know. The next time you run across a story of the police blowing away a little white kid, like, say, 11-year-old Chris Gaither of Talladega, Alabama, for carrying a BB gun... from one friend's house to another friend, or from his house to a friend's house, or from his friend's house back home to his. You know. Let me know. And you'll notice it's a replica firearm now. It's not a damn BB gun. Because America's police, who have been so thoroughly and effectively militarized, are no longer, are so damn terrified of everything that everything is a gun. Somehow one gets the idea that this is not going to lead to any good whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, over in Missouri, Stan, I told you we'd have more on the use of deadly force in defense of property in a minute. Well, they're headed that way in Missouri, Stan. State Senator Kurt Schaefer has successfully attached an amendment to SB 663, which is a crime bill there in the, under consideration in the state of Missouri, Stan. And it permits the use of deadly force on trespassers, as long as the person using the said deadly force reasonably believes, and it kind of calls for a little... reasonably believes that the use of deadly force is necessary to protect himself or herself or her unborn child or another against death, serious physical injury, or any forcible felony. Forcible felony. So, you couldn't, let's say Don Blankenship was to walk up to be a trespasser on somebody's property in Missouri, Stan, after this thing becomes law, because it will become law. Well, the felony that he was charged with was just that of ripping off some shareholders. So that's probably not a forcible felony. So you couldn't use this new statute to blow away Don Blankenship. If, however, you reasonably believe that the little black kid with the BB gun and the basketball was gonna come and forcibly shoot hoops on your on the backboard that you had hung over the garage. And by the way, according to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, that's not a basketball hoop. It's a basketball ring. No, really. We found this out when Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, anointed booger-eating future king of America, was campaigning there in Talibandiana. Now, Talibandiana, I probably need not even tell you, has a real passion for your basketball. Most of us have probably seen the movie Hoosiers. And people of a certain age are, they well remember Larry Bird from French Lick, Indiana. And hey, out there on the Talibandianan hustings for T-Rump right now, that's right, as Reverbo noted last night, none other than former Indiana basketball coach and, what do you call him, the serial folding furniture abuser, Bob Knight. Doesn't like it when you call him Bobby. Bob Knight. He could probably tell you, it's not a basketball ring, it's a basketball hoop, and Jesus Christ, how many swirlies must they have given you in high school, son? But, no, really, here in fairly short order, as long as you can muster up a dribble of PP into your BVDs, you are sufficiently in fear of receiving a forcible felony, and that'll give you the right to blow away anybody on your property that, well, you know, needs blowing away. Yeah. Said State Senator Kurt Schaefer, who is, of course, a repig-licking, well, he claims that the right to, here's the quote, "The right to keep and bear arms is an unalienable right, and the state government is obligated to uphold that right." Oh, dear. I probably need not point out that the word unalienable does not appear anywhere in the main body of the Constitution of the United States, nor in the precious, holy, sacred Second Amendment. The word unalienable appears in the Declaration of Independence, which most of these God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical evangelical fundamentalist homosexuals, well, they can't tell the difference. That's because they've never read either one. The right to keep and bear arms is an unalienable right, and that the state government is obliged to uphold that right. And except for the fact that the right to keep an arm bare arms is quite thoroughly alienable. When a court convicts a person of a felony, that person's right to keep an arm bare arms is immediately de facto alienated. Loses the right to keep and bare arms and be a member of that God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, well-regulated militia. Uh-huh. So, yeah, he's behind this thing there in Missouri that's going to sort of open the yawning maw of hell so that we can have more little Dedrick Colvins and Trayvon Martins and Tamir Rices, because if there's one thing white folks are in America, it's skeert. Interestingly enough, There is a new study from the Violence Policy Center. Bunch of liberals. They studied, to the extent that the data is available, are available, they studied firearms homicides. And they found out that out of every 32 criminal gun killings in 2012, only one gun death was attributed as a result of self-defense or some sort of manifestation of a self-defense kind of situation. Only 0.1% of justified attacks involved property crimes. And, of course, it's property crimes that we're largely thinking about when people say, well, yeah, but I want to keep a gun around my house for home defense. So when you're at 0.1%, you've pretty much self-eliminated the entire raison d'etre for, yes. There were 8,601 total homicides in 2012. Within the study, and of those, 259 deaths came from a self-defense situation. Only 13 out of the 50 states in the union logged zero justifiable firearms deaths. Oddly enough, those are mostly the states that have strict gun control laws. But there were also states where firearms can be gotten in, well, practically gotten in gumball machines. But according to the data generated by the survey, it doesn't matter if you're in gunned up Montana or relatively not so gunny New York. It just isn't a reality that saving oneself or one's family is something that is done a lot with guns. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Josh Sugarman is the executive director of the Violence Policy Center, and he said, purchasing a gun may help enrich the firearms industry, but the facts show it is unlikely to increase your personal safety. In fact, a nation of more than 300 million firearms, it is striking how rarely guns are used in self-defense. But don't worry, logic and common sense are never an effective foil against your average NRA goon. Yeah. It does get a little creepy out here from time to time, doesn't it? Yeah, kind of a whole lot. Sorry, I didn't mean to turn this into another gun survey, but, well... Sometimes you'll just have that. sorry, I'm trying to get a little cooperation out of the computer here. Yeah, dagnabbit. We'll get there. About 5 minutes before the hour. Let's see, what else do we have? Now, speaking of guns and shooting and carrying on, we've kind of forgotten, and it's the nature of the here and now aspect of the news cycle, but we've kind of forgotten about Robert Louis Deer. You still remember who Robert Louis Deer was? Yeah, he's the white terrorist that we never quite got around to calling a terrorist, who murdered some folks at a Planned Parenthood clinic in Colorado Springs. Oh, they continue to have hearings on him. His case is slowly but surely working its way through the judicial system. And he's had another hearing. And the phase of the proceedings that they're at right now is simply to try to figure out if this man is anywhere near enough to anything that we could credibly call sane. Not to stand trial or to understand the charges against him, but to fire his lawyers. Robert Louis Deer of South Carolina has repeatedly said he wants to defend himself, he wants to fire his lawyers, because he doesn't want to end up like that feller in Colorado who didn't even know where he was during the trial. They had him pumped up so full of so many drugs. Right. Well, along the way, they've been asking him questions and trying to figure out where it is, how his mind works. Good luck. Because in the hearing they had yesterday, there was testimony that he had told police that he was pretty sure there were 10 federal agents. Need my South Carolina accent for this. That were following him the day that he began murdering people at Planned Parenthood. He went on to say that his neighbor, as well as his girlfriend, were working for the feds. Recall that. At one of his earlier hearings back in December, he called himself a warrior for the babies. He went on to tell Colorado Springs Police Department Detective Jerry Schiffelbein, that the FBI had been a following of him after he'd done called into a radio station after the Branch Davidians had their little set to back in Waco in 1993. A couple of times he blurted out, "I figured it out!" Another time he blurted out, "I forgive her!" Talking about his girlfriend. It's pretty much already been established that Robert Louis Deer who, by the way, is white and therefore survived his attack. He's mentally incompetent, but the judge still has to rule. Still no word from the district attorney there, a man by the name of Dan May, as to whether he's going to pursue the death penalty. I figured it out! Right. Oh, there's just a wealth of stuff out there today. Well, let me see here. Interesting observation. Brother Deacon Asa says, by the way, I never heard the FBI ask an apple to break into Robert Louis Deere's iPhone. I'll be goddamned. Funny how that works, isn't it? No, probably not. Try to maintain some semblance of continuity. On the issue of race, there's been a real breakthrough up on the campus of Yale College, University? I don't know. This past Wednesday, Yale officials made an announcement. Now, if I understand correctly, they call their dorms, their residence halls, they call them colleges. And they have named various and sundry names. One of them is John C. Calhoun College. Maybe that's where all the young 1% Southern students at Yale like to live. They're in the dorm named after a vicious slaveholder. Well, that name's going away. Actually, it's not. You didn't think it was, were it? No, of course not. But they did announce that they're going to change. So the head of the residence hall has heretofore been referred to as master. That word has, shall we say, negative connotations for a significant number of people. Referring to someone as, you know, master. And I'm not talking about a significant number of people who are genies and resent. No. Well, Yale has decided to ditch the word master in regard to the heads of their residence halls, and they will now be called heads of college. If smart alecky college students are anything near as creative as smart alecky college students used to be, heads of college will quickly become heads of cabbage. But no, they still haven't quite gotten rid of John C. Calhoun's name on one of their buildings. And John C. Calhoun remains one of the most egregiously grotesque figures in American political history. Among other things, he did serve as Vice President of the United States. He didn't live to see the Civil War that he helped give rise to. Calhoun, in many ways, is most famous for a speech that he gave. He, among other things, was a notorious beater of his slaves. Back in 1831, one of his slaves had run away, and Calhoun wrote, "I am glad to hear that Alec has been apprehended. I wish you to have him lodged in jail for 1 week to be fed on bread and water, and to employ someone for me to give him 30 lashes well laid on at the end of the time. I hope you will be, I hope you will pardon the trouble." In an address in the Senate in 1834, he said, "It is an inevitable law of society that one portion of the community depended on the labor of another. When two races of men of different color and 1,000 other particulars were placed in immediate juxtaposition, the existence of slavery was good to both." And he wouldn't let go of the issue. It was two years later in the Senate again when he said, "The relation which now exists between the two races has existed for 2 centuries. It has grown with our growth and strengthened with our strength. It has entered into and modified all our institutions, civil and political. None other can be substituted. We will not, cannot permit it to be destroyed, come what will, should it cost every drop of blood." A year later, he doubled down. He said, "I hold that in the present state of civilization, where two races of different origin..." Idiot. All human. No two different places of origin. John C. Calhoun, your ancestors came from a little jungle corner of Africa, just like everybody else's did. The rest of us are kind of ashamed of that fact there, John, but it's true, it's true, it's true. "I hold that in the present state of civilization, where two races of different origin and distinguished by color and other physical differences..." I wonder what you're talking about there, John. "As well as intellectual, are brought together, the relation now existing in the slaveholding states between the two is, instead of an evil, it's a good, a positive good." There's still a statue of that evil old white devil down in Charleston, South Carolina, I do believe. Why it has not been given the Saddam Hussein statue treatment, I do not know. John C. Calhoun finally shuffled off to hell in 1850, 11 years ahead of the American bloodbath for which he laid the foundation. Elijah Green helped dig his grave. Elijah Green was a slave. He said, "I never did like Calhoun because he hated the Negro. No man was ever hated as much as him by a group of people." And yet, somehow or another, the privileged 1% wealth bunch up at Yale, the powers that run that place, have not gotten around to scrubbing John C. Calhoun's filthy name off of their building. It's a dorm, for God's sakes. But as a result of the announcement, Yale did say that they're going to look into all of the histories of the people whose names are represented at the school or have a significant place in the campus history, including Calhoun. Black Student Alliance at Yale is not particularly thrilled. They said this step is promising, but seems to have come in response to the precedent set by Yale's peer institutions rather than as a response to the concerns raised by students of color. Ultimately, Murray College, as the title decision, are still long overdue first steps toward creating a better and more inclusive Yale. They added, keeping the name Calhoun does not foster learning opportunities. Instead, it only diminishes our ability to combat the heinous nature of slavery and racism. The decision to name the second new residential college after Benjamin Franklin, because they're going to do that, has a similar impact. We remain committed to the idea that residential colleges should be named after people whose legacies offer values applicable to Yale students today, and John C. Calhoun and his advocacy of slavery as a moral good does not meet that bar. We are still having this conversation more than 150 years. After the close of that yawning hell on earth, the American Civil War. And in many ways, we're still having that conversation because there's still too many people in this country who don't understand just exactly the full weight and measure of the evil that was perpetrated upon this nation by the South and the people who insisted upon that war. And to a certain extent, to go from John C. Calhoun, whipper of slaves, to the second decade, the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, is not as big a leap as you might think. According to the Council on American Islamic Relations, a Donald Trump supporter attacked a Muslim woman in Washington, D.C. outside a local Starbucks. According to a report by WJLA-TV, a woman reported that she was approached last week by a Trump supporter who called her a fucking Muslim and then called her fucking Muslim trash. And then went on to say, I'm voting for Donald Trump so he'll send all of you terrorist Muslims out of this country. Mm-hmm. And she threw what is described as an unknown liquid, the Trump supporter did, on the Muslim woman. At first she walked away, then she came back and poured the liquid over the victim's head when she snuck up on her from behind. It's being investigated by D.C. police as a hate crime. According to the CARE statement, when the woman called 911, the officer who responded to the incident said, well, I can't respond to this. I can't do anything about this. It's a crime. It's not a crime. It's just freedom of speech. Oh, really? That's what free speech means in America today, at least to one member of the D.C. Police Department. The right of angry, ignorant, terrified, bigoted white people to walk up to a woman. How does one know she's Muslim? I presume by the headgear. I mean, there aren't that many women, Muslim or otherwise, walking around in D.C. in burqas or abayas, or any kind of full-body covering. It was probably the headgear. The hijab, I think, is the word for it. Well, I can't investigate that. That's not a crime. That's just freedom of speech. It's only getting hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter. Trump is being met with protests everywhere he goes now. Because of what a vicious bigot he is. T. Rump had a rally in California. Thursday night. And it was pretty nasty. He hauled out the "I'm going to make Mexico pay for the wall" business. 8,000 people turned out for this thing. At Pacific Amphitheater. Afterwards, protesters, as the report from the LA Times puts it, became unruly. And he brought the Syrian refugees in for a little bit of his classic hate as well. We're putting them all over the country by the thousands, and we have no idea what the hell is going to happen. And then he told the pig's blood story about the bullets dipped in pig's blood used to execute alleged Muslim terrorists during the Philippine-American War of 1899 to 1902, which in part inspired Mark Twain's The War Prayer. He promised to just torture the hell out of anybody he didn't like. He brought out his crooked Hillary trope. It seems to be gaining some ground. And then afterwards, disgusted people who had protested it took to the streets. They took over a couple of nearby intersections. They threw debris and shouted profanities against Trump. Oh, yeah. This is going to be just great. What kind of a how are we going to get through this? How do we lift each other up as we watch so many trying to tear this nation apart and rip it down? I mean, we've got this little community here. But I think we're going to have to be extra super duper double plus vigilant. Because this country is deeply conflicted with itself. Friday, today, 300 people gathered outside a convention center in Burlingame, California, south of San Francisco. Protesters held signs and Mexican flags. At one point, they rushed the security gates. Police were there with batons out. Inside the rally, Trump said, "That was not the easiest entrance I've ever made. It felt like I was crossing the border, actually." Is this what it felt like in Germany in the early 1930s? One begins to wonder. 21 minutes past the hour, and Friday on the front porch, well, that's what we do here every Friday. It's entirely possible that some folks were not expecting me back as quickly as I got back. For that, I apologize, but I'm glad to be here. We're trying to raise $290 this evening. I'm sorry, $28. $280. 10 at 28, 28 at 10, yada, yada, yada. $280. PayPal, U.S. mail, whatever. If you're going to go the mail route, send me an email so that I can let Boss Man Wayne know that he can leave the spider-proof gloves in the truck. So, yeah, I know. Earther says, and the funny thing is, Trump is probably the best of the Republican candidates. Well, better than Cruz. Kasich is probably better than Trump. No, Kasich's just a different kind of awful, Earther. He just knows how to come across as a little bit more civilized. You know, Kasich's the smile in your face, talk about you behind your back back part. Hi, Earther. Hi, Brother Bob. So let's take a little break and see what happens. You want to join in the Friday on the front porch festivities and frivolities? Well, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and you'll get the breadcrumb trail, and you'll be off and running, and part of the conversation before you even know what happened. Note coming in from our buddy, the Angry Indian. The entire GOP is stark raving mad, period. Yeah, well, it is. And angry, it's a hell of their own making. This is something they started. We can find a number of different starting points. The Barry Goldwater campaign of 1964, but it really, really came to life under the eight long nightmare years of Ronnie Reagan. But they're lit. But here's the scary part. Donald Trump just damned well might win the election. And anybody who says that's impossible doesn't know the meaning of the word and has an even less of a comprehension of the horrible, horrible mistakes that can be made by the American people using something as profound as, you know, the ballot. So jump into Friday on the front porch if you want to. You'll be more than welcome. Time to take a break. Hey, young Chris Gaither. This is for you. A long-distance dedication. On the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
In 1814, we took a little trip along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
We looked down a river and we see the British come, and there must have been 100 of them beating on the drum. They stepped so high and they made the
the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields, didn't say a thing.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Old Hickory said we could take them by surprise if we didn't fire muskets till we looked them in the eye. We held our fire till we seen their faces well. Then we opened up our squirrel guns and really gave them well.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. We fired our cannon till the barrel melted down. So we grabbed an alligator and we fought another round. We filled his head with cannonballs and powdered his behind. And when we touched the powder off, the gator lost his mind.
We fired our guns and the British kept a-coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, they ran through the briars and they ran through the brambles and they ran through the bushes where a rabbit couldn't go. They ran so fast that the hounds couldn't catch them. On down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Up, up, rip, roar, sound off. Rip, roar, up, up, rip, roar, sound off. Rip, roar, up, up.
I love the part about where the Americans sodomized the alligator. But, you know, that's me. The late, great Johnny Horton, gone before his time in the Battle of New Orleans. It just sort of came to me while I was talking about young Chris Gaither unloading the 9mm. But the 12th bullet found its mark. Hey, let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky, how are you? I mean, we're connected and everything. Sparky. Well, dadgummit, what's going on here? There he is. Yeah, can you hear me, Sparky?
Yeah, now I can.
Okay. Cool, was that me or you?
I think it was you. You were cutting in and out.
Huh. Strange.
Especially when you played that song.
That's entirely bizarre. Maybe that's something new dying inside the board. I don't know.
Yeah, that song took me back. I can remember that old TV picture with that guy sitting there with a Civil War hat on singing that song.
Civil War hat? Back, wow, I didn't know that. I don't remember.
Yeah,
that.
Back in the 60s or something.
Oh, like a Kepi hat?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you, Angry's trying to get into the group. Are you seeing anything coming from him?
I got a message he had to update.
Oh, okay.
And same with Haley. Haley's got a bug in his,
okay,
in his so, bonnet. So, I mean,
yeah, okay. A lot of people have been bitten by the update bug.
Well, that's just the way it's working right now.
Yeah.
I think Scott and Charles are here.
Okay. Do you hear me? Okay, Charlie, do you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Okay, great. I'm grateful for the little things at this point.
Yeah, I'm out in the middle of nowhere right now, so I hope my cellular connection on my phone is good enough to.
So far, so good.
How was your trip to Atlanta?
Actually, the trip didn't come off for a variety of reasons, not the least of which I was laid low for about 3 days by a nasty uprising of whatever it is that goes sideways in my gut sometimes.
Oh, and, sorry to hear it.
Yeah, I was rendered rendered myself intentionally unconscious for a couple of days, and I was much aggrieved by it, but didn't get to go anywhere. I was in no wise it would have been Limbaugh Radio if I'd gotten behind the microphone, because I was sedated out of my mind.
Oh, is that a term that's synonymous with hammered?
No, hammered is something I do to myself with cheap tequila. This was entirely pharmaceutical.
Oh, okay. The good stuff.
I don't care for it. I really, honest to God, don't care for it. I don't know. I guess Limbaugh enjoyed it, but I don't.
Yeah, it's, I don't know.
Well, there was a little bit of news out of your neck of the woods today, and it was kind of surprising and refreshing.
What's that?
The district attorney there in Nash Vegas.
Yeah.
Had a little something to say about all the potty laws. Assistant.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Assistant DA Chad Butler.
I thought I was going to have to start carrying a copy of my birth certificate around me in case I wanted to ever stop and take a crap.
Well, you may yet, and it may not even. I mean, well, hard to say. But for some reason or another, Assistant DA Chad Butler there in Nashville said, "As long as I've been doing this job and the hundreds of cases I've reviewed, I've never once had a transgender person come across my desk as an offender. A majority of my cases are fathers, stepfathers, uncles, Boy Scout leaders, coaches, youth ministers, preachers, people that are already close to the family that the family trusts. It's actually very frustrating because it sort of takes the dialogue and the conversation away from where it should be."
Oh, you're talking about something like molesting or something?
Yeah. And
I've worked with gay people before, and they, if you're not gay, I mean, they just leave you alone. They just like everybody else, you know.
Well, I mean, there's a purpose to a public restroom, and despite the occasional busting of senators from Idaho in the basement restroom of the Minneapolis International Airport, most people use it for the elimination of bodily waste and the washing of hands and whatnot. But Assistant DA Chad Butler sort of tied it all off with a bow and said, "A child is more likely to be sexually assaulted in their own bathroom than a public restroom by a stranger."
That's probably correct. That is probably correct.
But you know what? The religion.
You know, a lot of these. I'm sorry?
I was going to say the religion industry down there that way is not going to appreciate Assistant DA Chad Butler saying that he's prosecuted a bunch of youth ministers and preachers.
Yeah, it's sad, but it's true. And I don't know. I think a lot of these right wingers should go over to some of these European countries, like Germany and places like that, and they actually, they don't have. I mean, it's, if you want to go, you go out in the bushes. Everybody goes out, you know, if they got to go, you know, and there's no facilities around, you use the bushes, you know, and everybody uses the bushes, and there's none of this separating people by gender and, oh, you've got to go over here and you've got to go over here. It's just not like that in Germany.
No, not at all.
I want to say, I watched Where Do You Invade Next yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean to. That's on the weekend list.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying it's out on DVD or iTunes, I think it is now. And then if you just Google Where to Invade Next, watch online, you'll get a link.
Oh, okay. Well, I saw the segment on the schools in Finland, and of course Harry in Baltimore a good while back issued a glowing recommendation of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, they screened it at the West Virginia International Film Festival a week or so ago, and daggum if Michael Moore didn't come down to watch it. He said he'd never actually seen his own movie screened, so he came and watched it for the first time down in South Charleston.
Well, he must be feeling pretty good now. I understand, when he was sick, he lost a lot of weight.
Well, he looked like there was a little bit less of him, but he still didn't look like he was back in the full bloom of health.
Well,
hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Tracy.
Hey, Tracy.
Finally. No, I've been... Hi, hey, y'all.
Third time's the charm, I guess.
I guess so. Land of Goshen. It's like, geez, Louise.
Other people... Can I just say that Angry is on a Linux system, and it's hard to upgrade those right now.
Ah. How the heck is everybody doing on this fine Friday?
Shall I? Hey, this is Scott out in San Diego, Tracy.
Hey, now, Scott, how are you?
Well, I could give you the surface, meaningless, face the world with a smile answer, or I could tell you what's
actually.
Well, no, yeah, or I could tell you exactly what's going on. And Bob, I think this may be of relevance to more than a few of your listeners, if you want to hear it, because I'm a pigeon who's not too different from all the other pigeons. I hit the bar with my beak, and the pellet of corn comes out, just like all the other pigeons.
Absolutely. I mean, don't hide your light under, or your corn, for that matter, under a bushel.
Or your pigeon, for that matter.
Have you already exiled Punky this evening? I don't hear Punky.
Yeah, he's in the bathroom talking to his, conferring with his little birdie friend in the mirror.
Yeah, Der Spiegelbird.
Yeah, but so that's why it's so quiet. But yeah, if it's okay, let me take a couple of minutes and just bring you up to date on this. Because in terms of news, I haven't heard anything in the way of a positive development. And I'll give you a real life example why it's an important thing to pursue, you know, and to follow up on. So if that's all right, I'll do it.
Well, with the introduction, you might as well get it going, because it's like,
okay. All right. Well, first we've got to jump in the Wayback Machine with Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Peabody and Sherman. Okay.
And go back to January of 2015. That's when the new GOP Congress, and actually the new Congress, generally speaking, went into session for a two-year session. And you got to remember that in January of 15, the new Congress, the House and the Senate both, were controlled by the GOP. So there's that. Well, the very first thing on the order of business in the GOP House in January of 2015 was to orchestrate the system in such a way, and by the system I mean the Social Security benefits for retirees is a different pot of money, so to speak, than the Social Security benefits for disabled persons, as such as I am. There's about 10 or 11 million of us hither and yon. Now, what they did, that for years in both Republican Congresses, Democratic Congresses, Republican presidencies, and Democratic presidencies, for going back as far as you could look, whenever there was a shortfall in one of the pots of money, they would transfer some from the pot that was doing a little better off. And then sometimes the opposite would be true, and they'd shift a few of the funds into the first pot. Well, the Republican Congress decided that they would not allow that to occur anymore.
Of course not.
So that by around September or October of this year, if nothing is done to change it, people who are disabled, I know specifically, and possibly it may be that it'll affect all Social Security recipients, but I know for sure it'll affect disabled folks like me, their benefits starting in this fall will decrease by either one-fifth or one-quarter. I can't remember the fraction. Now,
wait a second.
Do you all follow me? I mean,
no, because see, I'm on SSDI, so I'm listening because I'm not I have a disability, so yeah. But I'm not on SSI because you know I worked and I paid into it, but I do have a disability.
Okay, so you get your benefits every month from Social Security.
Yes, sir.
Well, you're in the boat.
And it's sinking.
Well, I won't say that, but you're in the boat and you're bent over one of the barrels. So, okay. Or maybe inside one of the barrels.
Well, are they? It's spring. It hasn't started. It hasn't sunk yet, but it's beginning to spring leaks. It's not okay.
And as far as I know, and I watch this fairly carefully, there has not been anything that's occurred. In the way of good sense and compassion, because I don't know about you, but in my situation, the income that I receive from Social Security is my sole income. Other than every 3 months or so, I'll take all of my pop bottles, crush them up, and tote them down to the recycling place, and get $3 or $4.
No, see, I see, and that's where I am fortunate because I do work, you know, part time and whatnot and so forth, and I have a wife.
God bless you.
Since I have SSDI, me being married to her does not affect mine because it's not SSI.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, a lot of us, myself included, are literally working or disabled without a net.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the reason that is important, I mean, it's generally important just on the face of it, but today I get a notice from my landlord saying that beginning in June, my rent is going up by $35 a month, as it did last June, okay? Now, $35 a month is not a huge amount of money, but
yes,
you got to remember... Well, yeah, but in January of this year, there was no cost of living increase for people receiving Social Security. So here I am, and it's a very interesting thing. It tests your sphincter, if nothing else. So anyway, I want to put that out there because I'm sure that there are retired or disabled people whose sole source of income or their major income is from Social Security benefits, and they're screwing us every way that they can. And the tax decreases for the rich and powerful 0.1% are being financed on the back of schmucks like me. Yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there for anybody who wants to take a look at it and be as pissed off as I am.
Well, I find it utterly ridiculous that we have a do-nothing Congress. Absolutely, positively do nothing. They work on average, how many days of the year do they total? 150 days in the year that they actually work. Well, and how much do they make?
Well, the weeks that they work, usually it's Tuesday through Thursday, and they take God knows how many weeks of so-called... What do they call that? Constituent duties? I mean, they get more time off than Johnny Carson or Dave Letterman ever did. did from their nightly TV shows, and that was a shitload of time off.
Right. I mean, they get Christmas off. They get, what, the 2 weeks of Christmas. They get the entire summer.
No.
What else? Well, I mean,
just
I don't
August.
Know. I mean, well, that, I mean, for me, August is summer. I consider it August summer because it's just god-awful hot. But this, even if they didn't, I mean, the fact of the matter is they don't do it. They're not doing crap other than screwing us over. And isn't it amazing how all this is going to be happening? And, I mean, my thing is, aren't we supposed to be voting in November? I guess what I just, it's just that they don't care. And that's what troubles me the most. I mean, at least back in the day, they would care about their votes. But see, they don't care about the constituents because they have people like the Koch brothers and Wall Street.
And on top of that, Tracy, let's say they work Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on the weeks during which they do work, which is maybe half of the weeks of the year. They spend a third of the time that they're in Washington smiling and dialing from some little telemarketing cubicle to raise money.
Right.
To finance their next campaign. It's just crazy. I mean, how goddamn crazy do you have to be to play this game? I mean, if you told someone from another planet the way that it works here in American government, they would look at you like you've lost your mind.
You don't even have to say anybody, tell anybody from another planet, sweetie. Just somebody from another country. We are the laughing stock. I haven't worked at the airport in a while because I have, you know, my other gig. But when I pick up, I'm kind of glad that I haven't really been working that much because, you know, that means if I had to pick up somebody from the airport, I have to engage, and then they'll have to ask me about our politics, and then I'll shudder in shame. Because I'm not even a Republican. If I was a Republican, I would be incredibly embarrassed. But I'm embarrassed because I'm an American. And this sideshow circus act that we have going on, masquerading as an election, is just ridiculous.
Yeah, and the thing
just the fact that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz had
anointed booger-eating future king of America.
I'm gonna name Carly Fiorina as my. Yeah, I forgot about that part because I always forget about that part. But aren't you glad that I got the first most of it though? You know, just the fact that he had the pair to say that Fiorina is going to be his running mate. Don't you have to be nominated? Don't you have? Aren't there like isn't there like a process? Does he have to go through the convention?
He's doing what Reagan did in 76, back when Gerry Ford was the first unelected president after being the first unelected vice president. When convention time came around in 76 out in Kansas City, Gerry Ford was the incumbent president, elected or not, and Ronald Reagan wanted to take his place in the Oval Office. So he announced prior to the convention, I think, or prior to the nomination of even the presidential nominee, I think he named, he was from Pennsylvania, and I can't think of his name. Richard Schweiker. He was a congressman or a senator.
Don't get me to lying. I don't know.
Yeah, as his running mate. I'm pretty sure that's who it was. And it came to naught. I mean, Jerry ran against Jimmy Carter, and Carter beat him. And then Reagan finally made his ascension in, in the election of 80.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Bob, you're the wise man behind the control board there. you know, what do we do to?
Oh no, you ain't hanging that on me.
Well, no, but I mean,
like don't do that to Bob, man. That's
well, okay, all right. Don't tell me what to do then. Tell me what you think. What is your take on this? Is it as bleak as I've described it? And do you see any way out of this freaking nightmare?
Okay, I am not being dismissive, Scott, and I would never do that. Are you absolutely certain you read everything right? Because it seems to me like somewhere along the way, and that somebody would be like screaming from the top of a damn burning barn over this.
Well, they did. There was a good bit of noise in the first part.
Elizabeth Warren was yelling about it. I know she was.
I can send you the links, Bob, by email if you want.
I would like to have the opportunity to review them over the weekend, if you don't mind, Scott.
Sure, I'll be happy to do it. I'll search them up. I've got them. Because I know I sent them to, to Mike Malloy. And there was another guy that had a talk show that I used to listen to, and I sent them to him. So I'll just look in my emails after we get off today and send you. There's three or four of the links that basically tell you what it is. And then you can look on Google or whatever to see if there's been any change. And believe me, if there had been a change, I would have heard about it, because this is something that meets me where I live, at least where I live now. If I'm willing to cough up another $35 starting in June, you know?
Oh, without a doubt.
It is so unfortunate.
And here's the other wrinkle. Back in 2006, I sent a notification to the housing authority here in San Diego, showing the fact that I was eligible and expressing my interest in receiving housing assistance. And they said, well, it's an 8 or 10 year waiting list. Okay, so the 8 or 10 years now, since this is 2016, have passed, and all that they can tell me is I'm still on the list. Well, then you've got to wonder, why would a list of this sort be? Well, it's simply because the Congress, the Republicans in Congress, and maybe a few Democrats, will not finance the programs that assist people who need help with their housing costs. And the thing is, my landlord has other properties and other tenants who used this, and he's a happy participant in that program. He's more than willing to do it once I get taken into the program. But it's just a matter of when my number comes up. And basically what it'll do, they pay about a third or thereabouts of your rent, which is a cushion for someone for whom bucks are very scarce. And because of disability, they're unable to create, there are no opportunities really to go out and cause more bucks to occur.
Well, I can tell you this much, in regard to what you said about, you know, the time spent working by members of Congress. I got a note here from Steve in New York, and he says, I worked for a congressman in 1996. To say he spent a third of his time fundraising is extremely generous. It was absolutely more like 50%. And not much of it was phone calls, really. Much of it was spending time blast faxing out a one-page gimme-money letter. Staff writes and reads legislation. Virtually no members of Congress do legislating. You know, once
why would they do that? They have Alec for that.
Well, and you know, the Republicans do. And they've got, they've also, you know, as I discussed last night, you know, among the various, the Liberty Council, and what I wouldn't give for some actual investigative reporting of that gang of fraud merchants, they admitted that they've got lawyers in all 50 states preparing and lobbying potty bills.
No, Bob, these are the 501(c) groups that are not supposed to do lobbying and political activity, so-called, beyond a certain percentage. Is that what you mean?
Well, you can't, if you're a 501(c)(3), you cannot endorse candidates, okay? And you can't campaign against candidates. And you can't use more than 20% of your operational budget for lobbying activities. And the way we thumbnailed that last night, you know, we came up with a nice, easy, round number of $1.5 million to send 50 lawyers into 50 states. And believe me, that is a conservative, I mean, that's a lowball estimate. So that means they'd have to have a budget of at least $7.5 million. God only knows what their budget really is. But is there anybody out there scrutinizing these organizations to see if they really are living within the letter of the law? Because I'm betting the answer is no.
That would be a big no.
There's probably a public interest, non-profit, non-corporate media group that's doing it. I know that there's one that teams up with, I think, Frontline on PBS. I can't remember the name of the group, but I think they're pretty straight ahead in the sense that they're just looking for the information, and they don't buy into to any power camps or power groups. And I can't think of things that they've uncovered, but I know that they have. It could be like something in the public interest, or I just can't think of the name of the group. I'll have to think of it and then say it. But yeah, as far as, you're not going to find corporate media looking into this because they're all in bed together.
Right. And so consequently, yeah, how's it get fixed? And the brief answer is, it don't.
Well, I you know, this is one of the reasons, it is things like this, my situation and the situation generally, and the Congress, who is not about anything but themselves, that I have supported Bernie, lo, these many months. But even that, I'm not going to be able to. I had planned to send him $15 a month in May and then in June, and that would close out the primary season. But even that I can't do because of having to shift things around. It's as if it's set up so that even the little things that you try to do on your own behalf get squelched by the way things are, you know? And I know life isn't personal, but damn it, it sure shows up that way sometime.
Well, no, I mean, that's one of those things I believe in. You got to make it personal. Because, see, when the Republicans decide to just screw people on fixed incomes, on Social Security, they'll say, well, you know, it's nothing personal. It's just it's just economics. It's just budgeting. Well, you got to make it personal. And you have to make them understand that it, by God, is personal. Because if you don't, it's just, they'll just rub you out.
Well, I mean, I write to my Congresswoman, Susan Davis, who is she's a good Democrat as far as that goes. Barbara Boxer and Dianne Feinstein are both in the Senate, Democrats here in California, although I think one of them is retiring, and there's a race for a new senator this November. But beyond letting them know, hell, you could send an email every other day to the president and the vice president, and you'll get a form letter or a form email, if that. You know, and they give you, they smile at you and shake your hand and give you a look like, you know, we just couldn't care anymore if we got up an extra hour early every morning. But the bottom line is, the system is set up in such a way currently, at least in the House, that nothing's going to happen when you've got people like Ryan as the speaker, and these crazy tri-corner hat, don't tread on me flag waving, puffy pirate shirt wearing 17th century numbskulls and imbeciles running, or at least inhibiting and obstructing, no, really, obstructing actual members of Congress, the few that want to do the right thing and be responsible members of society, when you've got this lunatic fringe, literally, impeding and obstructing, nothing ever changes. And in fact, they do stuff that's even worse, like cutting disabled persons' Social Security benefits starting this fall in September, October, thereabouts, by one-fifth. Or one
quarter.
They
have to do something for you for Christmas there, you know? It's like, come on. It's right in the, you know, right before the holiday season when people get even more stressed out about money. And so, you know what? Why not add to your stress levels?
Well,
you know,
I think,
you know, they don't care.
Well, if it's something for Christmas, if it's a remembrance of the holiday, then I got to tell you, their current approach does not work, because I'm feeling like the little angel in Santa Claus's workshop. You know, people always wonder, how did the angel get on top of the Christmas tree? Well, the little angel in Santa Claus's workshop, it was busy as hell. They were getting to the last minute crush of Christmas. And the little angel is asking Santa and the elves and everybody, you know, what do I do? You know, what do I do? What do I do with my part in the proceedings to make Christmas festive about being on top of the tree? And they basically told the angel where to sit. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm feeling. As Tom Lehrer once said, I've got that uncomfortable feeling like a Christian Scientist with appendicitis.
Ooh.
I've heard that. That's a great one. It's well past uncomfortable. It's more like the sword of Damocles, and you look up and you realize that it's hanging from the last thread of an old gym shoe string.
Yeah. And yet I try to remain positive and upbeat, but I'm telling you, sometimes it's like jumping through flaming hoops to do it.
Well, I mean, up until 4 years ago, I was not far from your position because, you know, I was on my own. I, single mom, just trying, just, you know, and 35, you know, my rent went up $5. I was sweating. Like I tell people, it's like, you know, there was a lot of dinners that I went out with on dates with people that I would never want to be seen with, but I knew I'd go out with them and I would order like whatever the biggest thing I could order on the menu is I could take it home for a doggy bag for my child.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the things that you have to do.
Yeah.
You know, and then the balancing act. Okay, do I eat or do I pay bills? Well, if I don't pay the bills, then what happens? I mean, this is how broke I was at one point. I gassed, got turned off in the house. Because I couldn't pay, because gas, you know, we don't use, you know, gas out here like, you know, for heating like you do, you know, back east or what have you, because our winters aren't ridiculous. So my gas bill was $50, and that was over a course of maybe 6 months or whatever before they turned it off. I didn't have $50 to pay my gas bill. That's just how broke I was at one point. So I know that fear. It's that kind of thing that keeps you up at night. You know, you try to go to sleep and then you wake up in a panic. It's like, oh God, how am I going to make it today? You know, your mind is at a constant, you know, it's just, it never shuts down. It's like a hamster on a wheel. You're just going, going, going because you're, you know, trying to figure out how to make things, you know, And what kills me, because I actually, a while ago, I think I probably read, now that I think about it, I think I actually read about that because I posted it on my Facebook page about how there would be no cost of living increase this year. And the bullshit reasons as to why not. Well, it's not personal. We're just, you know, trying to be budget-wise. Well, you know, buddy, I wish you would take that kind of, you know, when you guys give yourselves raises or when you don't go to work, how much does the average congressperson make?
Well, I don't know the dollar figure, but I know in the time it takes me to take a leak, they've probably earned as much as I earn in a year. Or easily a month.
Their salary is $174,000 a year. The Speaker and the House whips and stuff like that, they get extra money.
Of course they do.
And Ed, it's not so much that I'm fearful. I mean, yeah, I'm interested and I'm concerned. Right now, I'm pardon me, I'm angry that such a thing is happening. If it were happening to someone other than myself, I would be angry, because people who are in a bad way to begin with don't need more crap piled onto their plate. Okay? It offends my sensibilities as a human being that this country, as great as it is, at least that's what they keep telling me, that that the situation exists that the most vulnerable people in the society are hanging by a thread from the old gym shoe that Bob mentioned. I mean, there's no excuse. Now, there might be a lot of reasons, but there's no excuse for this situation to be. And, you know, this is why I pinned a lot of hopes on Bernie, because he calls it the way that it is, in my estimation. And I can't say for sure. I mean, I think I had said the other day when I talked to Bob on the show, you know, if it comes down to Hillary versus Trump, versus some other third-party person come November, I will cup my balls, hold my nose, and sidle up to the voting booth and pull the lever or fill the oval for Hillary. But I won't do it with a spring in my step, a song in my heart, or anything of that sort. I'll do it because it behooves every good human being to not elect somebody like Trump or Cruz or even Kasich, okay?
I'm about to make it even worse.
Oh God.
You may recall a week or so back I had the conversation or the little mini meltdown about Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton's usage of the phrase I could care less. Now that phrase makes me eat dirt and run rabbits. It just does. I know that it doesn't for others, but it does me. It's fingernails down a chalkboard. It's broken glass across slick concrete, and I'm shuddering just saying those phrases right now because it just me. Okay. It ain't getting any better. And as I pointed out, she is, and I'm not saying, you know, oh Jesus Christ, I hate her. I don't. I simply recognize her for who she is, and she is a terrible candidate, an awful campaigner, a lousy politician, and don't much like pressing the flesh with the hoi polloi, okay? And what'd you say?
Not you, baby. I was just fool with this blew his horn at me for whatever the reason.
No. I'm just playing. So, and she's also inartful and inept. So we went over the business with I could care less. And let me see if this clip actually covers it, and I hope you all can hear it, because, well, there's something here that when I read it, I just went, Jesus Christ, no, really? And so here we go.
Then deal me in, because that's exactly what I've always done for decades, what I will do in this campaign.
He has taken politics to a new place.
He being Trump, and Trump saying that she's crooked Hillary, and saying the nasty stuff about Mexicans, and that, well, there's just not many people other than white folks that he has anything decent to say about. And he claimed that she was playing the woman card, and that's what this is about. And so she's responding to the idea that Trump is a very nasty person, which he is. So with that as set up, let's restart.
Then deal me in, because that's exactly what I've always done for decades, what I will do in this campaign.
He has taken politics to a new place with his negative branding of people, whether it's saying Jeb Bush is low energy or talking about Lion Ted Cruz. And for his supporters, it's really worked. He has lately taken to calling you, I believe, corrupt Hillary, and he's had some rather personal and pointed tweets. Have you learned anything from watching the way that Republicans dealt with him in the primaries that will inform how you will deal with such an unconventional candidate?
Well, you know, remember, I have a lot of experience dealing with men who sometimes get off the reservation in the way they behave and how they speak. I'm not going to deal with their temper tantrums or their bullying or their efforts to try to provoke me. He can say whatever he wants to say about me. I could really care less. I'm going to stand up for what I think the American people need and want in the next president. That's why I've laid out very specific plans. There's nothing secret about what I want to do with the economy, with education, with healthcare, with foreign policy. I've laid it all out there. And he can't, or he won't. I can't tell which. So we're going to talk about what we want to do for the country, and he can continue on his insult fest, but that's the choice he's making.
Okay, so she did the could care less thing again, so we know it wasn't a mistake. She just doesn't understand how stupid that phrase is, but that's not what I'm on about, okay? She said something else. Did anybody catch it?
What, used to men going out to the reservation and reining them in?
I have a lot of experience dealing with men who sometimes get off the reservation.
Uh-huh. I heard it.
And shall we run through the meaning of that really loaded, bigoted, toxic, racist phrase? Because there's another phrase that used to be used as well. And then we moved over to off the reservation, which is bigoted against indigenous peoples of the United States and North America and mm-hmm. South America.
Reining them in, Bob. Don't forget about their rate. You know,
well, they've got to be. Oh, God damn it. They've got to be brought to heel now, don't they?
They need to, because they're predators.
Tracy, darling Tracy. What did we also used to say besides off the reservation?
Oh, there's so many to choose from, Bob.
No, there's only one. There's only one, Tracy.
You gotta tell me, because I'm in traffic.
Off the plantation.
Off the plantation.
Off the plantation. Thank you. See, of course my white friends will remind me.
Well, you can't be the lone militant all the time. Some of us get to be militant once in a while too, even though we kind of pale.
Well, see, that's why I need y'all. Because, see, you know, you can't have them going too far off that plantation now, Mrs. Hillary.
So, but she knew that what with the entire southeastern United States having given her the lead that she has, such as it is, she can't be saying off the plantation. She's gotten that far. But, you know, if you want to take a big steaming shit on the American Indians, what the hell? Why not? She's privileged Hillary. She can do that. And after all, we're talking about men anyway, so who gives a damn?
As soon as she said that, my blood just kind of ran a little colder. It was just like, did you just say off the reservation? Break, oh my God, rein them in.
I mean,
because you know you got to break them down too, you know that, right? Because you got to, you know, because you know you can't have those uppity Indians and Negroes, you know, thinking and wanting, I don't know, freedom.
Jeez. And of course, you know what off the reservation means. When the government, and it was usually the military, said, well, you know, the Comanches have gone off the reservation. You know
gotta
what?
Round them up.
No. Well, that entitled the American military to go and slaughter them at will.
Yep.
That's what happened to Captain Jack here in California.
Yep. So
he held out in the lava beds up by Tule Lake.
And, speaking of California. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, no, I just kind of want to stay with this a minute to see if I'm overreacting or not. I find
no, you're not.
I find that to be a repulsive phrase. In fact, I've been doing this for 12 years plus now. Okay, and I have used that phrase in the past, and I've caught myself and oh, that is loaded. That is freighted. Oh, that's just ugly. I am never going to use that again. And so here's Jake Tapper, and Jake Tapper doesn't look at her and go, off the reservation? Really, Dr. First Lady, Senator Secretary? Off the reservation? Shall we call the folks out at Pine Ridge and see how they feel about that phrase? How do you reckon they feel about off the reservation in Tahlequah, Oklahoma? What's that mean, Senator? Off the reservation. And then, of course, she'd say, well, I didn't mean it that way, but I apologize if anyone was offended.
Someone was offended. It's when you call, it's like the person that I'm no longer really friends with, because I gave her, you know, first she was telling, but trying to think, oh, the first insult was, you're too educated to speak like that. And then the next one was, you don't act so colored.
Ooh,
and in both
what?
Times, don't act so colored. And I'm like, and this is, but I love it when she says that, as she says that, as she's wagging her finger and rolling her neck and appropriating, you know, gestures that are supposed to be, you know, that of a black woman. I can't. And of course, you call out people on it, and they look, oh, I didn't mean to offend you. Or better yet, they double down on it. Well, I don't see why you're so upset. You know, stuff like that. That privileges, yep. Man.
But I mean, Jake Tapper's a guy who probably makes no less than $250,000, and maybe upwards of as much as $1 million a year or more. Okay. And I mean, he's a smart for-profit media journalist. And he didn't even cringe when she said off the reservation. I mean, let's take it back and let's do a little forensics on this, okay? because I wanna see if she hesitates or stutters or anything.
Well, you know, remember,
are you watching video or
are
listening to audio?
Well, I've got video, but there's audio, and I mean, all, yeah, you know.
No. Well, I was saying, because you can see her facial expression.
Well, that's what I'm doing.
Because you get right.
Remember, okay. I have a lot of experience dealing with men who sometimes get off the reservation in the way they behave and how they speak.
She's smirking. She's smirking. And mm-hmm. There was men who get off the reservation in the way that they speak,
like nah, you know, nah, weak.
But is it possible for and I don't want to use the phrase, Is it possible for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton to get out of hand with her usage of loaded, freighted, bigoted, racist language?
Apparently not, because you talk about, I mean,
no, that's misogyny if you say that about her. But she can smear the entirety of the remainder of the people who lived here for 15,000 years before my and her colonial white ancestors came here and just about genocided them off the planet. Oh,
hey, Bob,
that pisses me right off.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Try this on from a slightly different angle. Okay, I will give you entirely what she said was inappropriate and wrong. Okay, off the reservation is not a useful phrase, okay? But she couched it in the context of the way that men speak and behave. I kind of wonder if there's some kind of residue about Bill's adventures with his intern and many others, maybe back in the 90s and before, that maybe she's not quite over that. Because, I mean, given the same situation, if we're talking about speaking and behavior, his behavior was certainly whatever the positive way to express off the reservation is. So that makes me wonder about their dynamic. You know, did they sign a fraudulent treaty and he went off the reservation anyway in terms of their marriage? I know it's a different story, but it still makes me wonder just what the hell she's talking about when she talks about men speaking and behaving.
Well, what she means by that, it's a question about Trump. And she's saying that there are men out there who just, you know, don't talk right to her, and they have to be not brought to heel. What do they have to be, Tracy?
They have to be brought to heel.
No.
Can you hear me? I just lost y'all.
No, you're still there.
Okay, now what were you? Because I couldn't hear you. They had to be brought to heel, to heel, and what else? Because it should be embedded in my memory.
Let's go back to the audio for a minute.
I have a lot of experience dealing with men who sometimes get off the reservation in the way they behave and how they speak. I'm not going to deal with their temper tantrums or their bullying or their efforts to try to provoke me. He can say whatever he wants to say about me. I could really care less. I'm going to stand up for what I think the American people need and want in the next president. That's why I've laid out very...
Well, she used a particular phrase and...
Reined in?
Was that it? Reined in?
I
have a lot of experience dealing with men who sometimes get off the reservation in the way they behave and how they speak. I'm not going to deal with their temper tantrums or their bullying or their efforts to try to provoke me. He can say whatever he wants to say about me. I could really care less. I'm going to stand up for what I think the American people need and want in the next president. That's why I've laid out very specific plans. There's nothing secret about what I want to do with the economy, with education, with healthcare, with foreign policy. I've laid it all out there. And he can't, or he won't. I can't tell which. So we're going to talk about what we want to do for the country, and he can continue on his insult fest, but that's the choice he's making.
He will also... try to attack you for the trade deals that he's attacked so many of his...
Yeah. Okay, so it wasn't there, the reined in or anything, but I still...
There's also the question of, well, given all that, she's mentioned how she deals with men who do this or don't do this. How has she dealt with them in the past? What does that look like?
Well, and there's something, and I don't mean, I'm not trying to be offensive here, and I apologize in advance for even using the phrase, but if we're going to talk about her using language like off the reservation, then do you suppose Jake Tapper would have raised one of his professional for-profit media journalism eyebrows if she'd said, I have a lot of experience negotiating in the foreign policy field, and I've had to Jew down a lot of men from their positions.
Oh, God.
Or, well, you know, mean, we had a hard time putting this agreement together. It had so many parts. We felt like by the time we were done, we just Afro-engineered it.
I think the word you're looking for is nigger rig.
Let's try not to.
Well,
or let's say, you know, I went over there to meet with my counterpart Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister of Russia, and they treated me like real white folks.
Yeehaw.
Because off the reservation is the linguistic equivalent of all of those phrases.
Yeah, which leads me to wonder if she's willing to use that terminology, which is pretty inflammatory, what does her, quote, dealing with men, close quote, look like? It sounds to me she's pretty goddamn serious.
So this is within the context of Trump being Trump, Trump being a misogynistic dick. Okay? I mean, because he is. What constitutes, I think if I understand you correctly, Scott, what you're asking is what constitutes in the larger frame based, you know, because this is all based on, she's describing her previous experience, what constitutes a man going off the reservation with her in the past?
Yeah.
Is that yeah. anyone who disagrees with Hillary?
I'm sorry, I missed that. Is that what?
I said, is that just anybody who happens to disagree with Hillary? Has any man who disagrees with Hillary, by definition, gone off the reservation? Is it possible to disagree with Hillary in good faith? Is that what Bernie has done by running against her in the primary? Has Bernie gone off the reservation? What does gone off the reservation mean, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton?
Well, it could mean any damn thing, because the way human beings are wired, one threat is just as good or bad as the other. Because they all come under the general headings of threat, and or perceived threat anyway. And in terms of Trump, if it comes down to her versus him, okay. As we approach November, she will do everything she can possibly do to cut him off at the balls or at the tiny dick.
No, cut him off at the pass.
Uh-huh. Well, there's that, but I didn't know they were calling it that. Get your hands off my pass.
I was just thinking, since she was talking about raiding people in and off the reservation, she had to say, somebody had to say, cut them off at the pass. Come on now, player.
It seems like she's going to shoot first and ask questions later, is what I'm saying. And while I'm at it, you know, she just seems like it's serious business if she's talking that way.
Well, she wants to be taken seriously. You know, she wants to show, well, you know, I may be a woman, but I can handle people like Donald Trump. And all men who try to, you know, make it look like just because I'm a woman, I'm not capable. I want to show y'all just what I'm capable of.
Well, she's showing up to me back in the late 50s or maybe very early 60s. Joan Crawford, the actress, was married to a guy named Alfred Steele, who was the chairman or president of Pepsi, and he died. Yes. And by virtue of being married to him, she became the new chairman or chairperson. And the scene in the movie Mommy Dearest where...
That was awesome, actually.
Where what's her name? Faye Dunaway portrayed Joan Crawford in that movie. They depict the first meeting after Alfred Steele died, and they tried to get her off the board or her into something ceremonial, and she stood up and said, "Don't fuck with me, fellas," you know. And that's how Hillary kind of shows up for me anymore. She's having a nice. "Don't fuck with me, fellas" moment.
Nice.
Look, well, I got no issue with being tough, okay? Because it's a hard as nails world that she or anyone else who fills that office works in. I am concerned with the fact that she is so obliviously cosseted within her own sense of privilege that she doesn't understand that off the reservation is a really, really, really offensive term.
Uh-huh. I get it. You get it. I'm pretty much sure everybody on the horror family. But see, that's the thing about when something like when phrases become part of the lexicon, when you're not aware of how we live in a country where we still have a team called the Redskins. And people are like, "Well, you're just being overly sensitive." Or the Braves. It's these things, these words and these phrases that have been, since our country is so entrenched and racism is so entrenched and embedded in our culture, we don't even realize it a lot of times when we're saying horribly offensive, racist, and bigoted things.
Well, it's the great national blind spot.
I caught myself.
I mean,
I think you called me on September. Once I said Indian summer, and I didn't even realize that was offensive, and I still don't. And I'm like, why is it offensive? And see, that's
anytime a white person attaches the word Indian to something, it means that it is false,
right? So it's like Indian,
Indian summer, Indian giver. We've got a little root. We've got a little root here that grows in Appalachia called an Indian turnip. And if you take even the tiniest bite of it, it feels like a million needles are being driven through your tongue. It is a false turnip. And none of that is even warranted.
Bob. I was telling you about my two great-great aunts who I kind of grew up with as a young child. One was born in 1867. The other was born in 1880. And I was just a little 5 or 6 year old kid. But I remember that their word, and maybe it's a Southern thing. I grew up just outside of D.C., which is technically the South. But their term for Brazil nuts.
I know what it is, and let's just don't.
N-word toes, okay?
Yes.
That's what it was, and they said it as if there was nothing, that it was just another, that's what they were. Grab the nutcracker and crack me one of them N-word toes. So, but my theory is if a nation has karma, then this country will be eternally screwed because we have never come to terms with the two national crimes, that is, the treatment of the Native Americans and the enslavement of black persons.
And I've said similar in the past, Scott, that the karma, the karma of this country and this continent may have been screwed long before the birth of this nation. It's a blood debt.
Yeah.
Did you see that picture? Did I send you that picture, Bob? Of the two German shepherds? May harm and never bite you in the ass, and then the next, the picture, and then the dog next to it has a sign, "I'm karma."
And it's just like with the Redskins and the other things that we've got the blind spot about. If you point out to people and invite them to look at the possibility that the reason things are so fucked up to a fare-thee-well in this country in terms of how we deal with one another is because we never came to grips with how we massacred the Native Americans and how we enslaved black people after bringing them here over an ocean in chains. They look at you like you, like, man, what's your problem? You're living in the past.
It happened so long ago. What is your issue? I didn't own any slaves. Why are y'all so angry? You really want a list?
Well, but you're never going to get anywhere trying to. Anybody who asks that question does not want the answer. I mean, look at the language used in his runaway slave ad by John C. Calhoun that I mentioned during the filibuster. That he would pay for 30 lashes well laid on. Okay, I mean, you know, and that's not just a rhetorical flourish. This was a newspaper ad in which he was asking for a slave named Alec to be whipped with 30 slashes and really beat the shit out of him. That's what well laid on means to the planter class of South Carolina Stan.
Well, it was in advertising parlance, it was a selling point, which brings us back to Hillary and her expression running off the reservation. That in some manner is a selling point. It's one of two things. It's either a representative of her own personal blind spot, or she doesn't give a shit. It'd be one of those.
Or it's something
that's inartfully phrased.
Well, and if we're just going to write it off as inartfully phrased, then we need to do a comparison contrast thought experiment. If back,
well, I don't think it is personally.
Me either. But if back, let's try it though, just for fun. If back during the reign of error, Dim Leader had stepped up to the microphone, say in 2002, and said, "Saddam Hussein has gone off the reservation, and we're going to have to fuck him up." Every liberal progressive commentator in the entire United States would have said, look at that bigoted racist prick. And let's be fair. Let's try to imagine President Obama stepping to the microphone and saying, well, you know, I realize there are issues with our agreement with Iran, but there are lots of safeguards as well. If the Iranians go off the reservation, we'll be able to deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he would any more than he would say, if the Iranians go off the plantation, we'll be waiting there with 30 lashes well laid on.
And he wouldn't say, I could care less. Irregardless.
Well, here's another one, Bob.
You've taken me to a place I didn't want to go, Tracy. You're making my Carpenter's Tunnel syndrome act up.
I've got more nails on the chalkboard for you. Maybe there's a simple explanation. Maybe all of this has been happening because Hillary fancies herself as very unique. I hate very unique. You're either unique or you're not. Very is superfluous.
Exactly, and I hope Punky just, like, you know, pecks you in the noggin in the middle of the night for that.
Oh my God! See, you know, remember, fellas, I'm driving in L.A. traffic, and what you do? What are you doing? Why?
I'm not the one who said irregardless, damn it.
Hey, can I ask you a question? Real quick question, Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
Are you up to date on Underground?
I'm sorry, I said that. No, no, I am not. As a matter, oh, now you talk. You guys saw my post about what happened with me yesterday with Time Warner, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They failed to mention to me because, you know, I transferred service and I had my DVR, right? Yeah, they failed to mention that since I was moving that they were going to take the DVR that I had all my shows saved on. So I'll, because I was going to do a binge watch thing because I've been, you know, kind of busy moving. And so I was actually going to kind of do a binge watch thing, you know, maybe next week. I can't do it now because why? I have a new DVR and I no longer have all those shows. I have 5 episodes that I will not. Well, I'm pretty sure I can get them on demand. But
yeah,
it's just kind of, you know, because I may, when I changed, when I set up the appointments and stuff to, you know, to move my service, I did it a month ago. With, you know, had I known that, you know, if you don't watch the stuff that's on your DVR before you move, you no longer watch it because we're taking that DVR and giving you a new one. Because, see, on my TiVo, it's saved on my hard drive. And so, when we, because we moved the TiVo as well, and as soon as we, you know, plugged it up and the cable guy came and everything, there were all my shows on my TiVo. Unfortunately, none of which are underground. So I'm slightly devastated.
Have they swapped out the box yet?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, see, they did all that. Yeah. Oh, okay, Scott. So what had happened? Quick, you know, Reader's Digest version. I set up an appointment. I moved. Yesterday was moving day. I, you know, and every so often. I was very pleased and proud of myself. Pleased with and proud of. So, I set up all these appointments, you know, set up the appointment because now that I have a house, we got the Time Warner Intelligent Home alarming stuff and all that. So, set it up for 8 to 9 a.m. yesterday morning because the movers were coming later. And the way it was, I'm like, I figured, you know, this. Like an 8-hour job because it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, the reason I asked is...
So, 8, 9 calls? Well, one quick... Okay. No, yes. And that, but the bottom line is, they, let me just quickly say that the, I call because 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock comes, I call Time Warner, where's my tech? Oh, well, Ms. Porter, he came to your house, you weren't there. I'm like, well, what do you mean I wasn't? Oh, it shows, the computer says that he was there at 8:30. I'm like, no, he wasn't, because not only I was outside talking to one of my neighbors, but, and you know, so this is going back and forth. I've talked to 3 different people. Finally get the third rep, you know, that person that's going to say, you know, you're lying, Miss Porter, you were not there. Well, our rep was not, he documented that he was.
I think we're losing Tracy.
I think we are.
He was.
Well,
so, in other words, the.
Tracy, hold off if you can hear us.
Address on Google Earth. Oh, I can hear you. Okay.
Yeah, basically, yeah, the reason
you're breaking
I was asking,
up wherever you're driving at, you're breaking up right now, Tracy.
The reason I was. The reason I asked whether you still had the box was I haven't lost my box. I've got AT&T UVerse and a whole bunch of shows that are like virtually irreplaceable. And I thought about if they ever had to swap out the box. There are some websites with do-it-yourself ways to swap out the hard drive inside the box. And replace it with a brand new one. But you would need to do it by the brand name of the box and all that. And it's,
that's so much work.
You've got to be fairly adept at mechanical stuff like that, which I'm not.
Now,
but you could probably find somebody to do it.
Because that sounds like something I would break. That just sounds like...
Yeah, I know how that works.
And you know what, that it's that kind of stuff. I think I don't, what I don't understand is why DVRs aren't cloud based anyway.
Yeah,
wouldn't that make
sense? You would think they would be. I mean,
they haven't got there yet.
You can just stream it whenever. Well, they haven't gotten a lot of places yet, but damn it.
Well,
but my best part.
My dish network thing, you can hook to the internet and get stuff.
Well, so. See, this is why I'm getting probably the next week or so, because I have a TiVo box. I'm getting another TiVo box, the new one, I forget what it's called, the Volt or something, and I will no longer have a Time Warner cable box that I'm paying $25 a month to rent. Once you buy the TiVo box, it is yours, and you do have to pay a monthly service charge. However, never, it's still cheaper than my monthly service charge for my cable box.
You may not have Time Warner much longer. Charter's trying to merge with them now.
Oh, God.
My service here for internet only. That's all I use them for.
Well, the only reason why I have Time Warner, because I would just say screw it and just go antenna only, but I happen to be married to a Dodger/Laker fan.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way you could watch a Dodger or Laker game is to have Time Warner.
Or view it online.
Right, and no, that's not going to happen. No. Well, we're looking into getting a new TV. So I think that's one of those possibilities.
Do you got a TV that's HDMI capable?
Uh-huh.
You just plug in an HDMI cable. If you have a laptop, you can run shit through your laptop through it.
That's true.
TV.
That's true.
That's what I do all the time. That's how I watch movies.
That's true, too. That's how Alex watches movies. He doesn't even have a cable box. I just, like I said, if Jan wasn't a baseball fan, I couldn't.
We don't like going to baseball games, do we, Tracy? Even in lovely Chavez Ravine?
You know, I can't, Bob, because of the conscientious person that I am, I do find it very troubling. I'm not going to lie. When you know the history of a place, you know.
Oh, my God. No, I get it right, too.
Tim would go with her.
And he said it correctly, too. Chavez Ravine, not Chavez.
No, it's Chavez.
Wait, the way Tim's been posting Dodgers scores and King scores on Facebook, yeah. I think he'd go to the game with you.
Well, Tim. By the way, Tim, we're going to do a fundraiser at my church that is involving the Dodgers. As a matter of fact, Friday, June 3rd is LGBTQ night at Dodger Stadium. We're going to be selling tickets to raise a little money for our church. It's a giveaway night, and it's fireworks night.
Oh, cool. That sounds cool.
So I will keep you posted. I'm waiting. I hate it when I make arrangements for stuff, and then I still got to wait for people to give me approval. I'm so tempted just to buy the damn tickets myself and just deal with it. But Jan will kill me if I spend out that kind of money. Kill me dead.
Yeah.
Well, I get reimbursed. There's no issue about getting reimbursed, but still, I can't stand it.
I checked in on once upon a time, and this is back in the days of me watching television, and goes back to a childhood spent watching Braves games on TV, otherwise known as the Atlanta Baseball Club, and going to the games when I worked in Atlanta and worked for CNN. And through the glory years of the 90s when they won a World Series beating the Indians.
Wait, stop. Are you making that up seriously? The Braves beat the Indians?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Otherwise known as the Cleveland Baseball Club. You can get in real trouble still. But anyway, and I was raised on baseball. I was raised a Reds fan. I was astonished when I just looked at I glanced at the standings the other day and saw that my poor Atlanta baseball club is 4-13, and it's like, we're home, dear. They suck again. And they do. But going to a baseball game is good fun when you can afford it. Even though it's the West Virginia Power and they've got a mascot who's a lump of coal. I love going to the Class A baseball games down in Charleston. It's a lot of fun.
Well, Bob, I've got a question, and for the rest of the group too. Now that we're on baseball, I'm serious. The baseball team here in San Diego is called the San Diego Padres,
yes.
Which is another designation for a religious person. Missionaries who wore I don't know if they were Franciscans.
But the missionaries who came and oppressed and converted and tortured and killed the native people.
So how is Padres not a derogatory name, because you've got a religious group that browbeat the natives 15 ways from Sunday?
Right, I mean, you can translate that as the San Diego Roman Catholic priests.
Well, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Of course, now the let's root for the boogerers or buggerers would not trip merrily off the tongue, but still, I mean, what are you going to call them? I mean,
oh God, it's just like I said. I didn't even think about the fact we were just talking about the Braves and the Indians and the Redskins, and I didn't even think about the damn Padres.
Well, yeah, to me, it's right there, up there, because the native Hispanic people and the Native Americans, the indigenous tribes of which we had,
right, yeah. I hope I didn't lose everybody, but I just had a note. Hey, let me bust in with this real quick because we haven't done any fundraising this evening, and I just had a note from Brother Deacon Asa, who said, hey, Brother Bob, in the interest of putting a dent in the fundraising needle, I have carefully placed a Ulysses Grant on the upside-down table on the challenge. Asa is having fun with language this evening. He's a longtime knower of words. I'm hoping one or more members of the Horn Family Community Congregation will step up and match it in the remainder of the program.
Matched,
okay. Anybody want to match Tracy? It's just out there, just generally for the, because, you know, we try to raise $200 a night, and we came into the evening at 280. And, by the way, I'll put the pitch out there. It turns out that these last several days here are days when we don't have hardly any subscribers. So a $10 or $20 or $50 or $100, whatever you want to do, subscriber, in this particular week would be particularly welcome. But okay, thank you. So Asa, challenge met.
Well, Bob,
by Tracy.
Bob, I tell you what, I am, given my earlier comments about what's been going on, I'm still reconfiguring my monthly budget.
Oh, Scott, don't worry about it.
Scott, no.
Yeah, but you got to remember, important is important, and believe me, I'm cutting some other stuff that's extraneous, but I do want to keep current and keep available stuff that really does matter, and this program comes under the heading of something that truly matters, because when you're up to your eyeballs in nonsense, it's good to have an outlet and a resource where there are people actually discussing stuff of meaning and consequence. So it won't be a lot, but, you know, every little bit helps.
Thank you, Scott.
And I'll let
you
know in the coming weeks how that'll play out.
Much obliged, indeed.
If I can do it, I'm glad to do it. And, boy, if I ever hit the Powerball, we're all set.
Amen.
I may become, got that on the radio, right? We heard them. You said that, right?
Absolutely.
When he hits Powerball, we're all set. Now, is it all of us that's on the call right now?
Well, yeah, okay, let's do it that way. But I've got my friend Christine back in Cincinnati, where I lived before I moved out here. We've got a standing deal that if either of us wins a big jackpot, we're splitting it. But the half that I'll have left, I'm sure, will be enough to give everybody a taste, at least everybody here tonight.
No, so you somebody, have to give me a taste.
Somebody jot down the names of the folks, because and every so often Powerball purchase is in my budget. That ain't going away, because all it takes is one. And I met the first $1 million winner back in the 70s, back in Maryland. He was an overnight baker making $65 a week, and he was the first $1 million winner in the state of Maryland when they had started their lottery.
That was 1970, you said?
Mid-70s, like 73, 4, something
like
that.
Well, see, back there, $65 a week, you could actually do something with $65 a week, couldn't you?
Oh, I know. Hell, my first radio job was in 73, and I think I was making $2.10 an hour, plus all the promotional records I wanted, you know, albums and singles. I used to have a hell of a record collection.
Oh, by the way, with regard to your splitting the jackpot comment, Earther in the chat room, Scott says, "Commie."
Well, all right, I'll be able to afford therapy to treat that condition once I hit the big number.
Exactly, exactly. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks to all of you in the chat room. Some we heard from, some we heard less from. But thanks for joining in, Haley and Jules and Larry and Tim. Thank you, Tracy and Charlie and Scott, and thank you very kindly, Sparky, for your intrepid efforts as the longtime moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. We were trying to raise $280 tonight. We knocked that down to $180 over the weekend. If anybody wants to help, thank you all very kindly. We'll be back with more on Monday after Anniversary Sunday. Whatever it is that Agnes and I are going to do in the middle of what appears to be a thunderstorm. Thanks to all of you for keeping all of this going. Thanks to all of you for sharing your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation. Thanks very kindly to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Let's go listen to Malloy.